Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 694, The Perfect War Machine. This program is being recorded on October 18th of the year 2009. The title of the broadcast refers to the SV40 or Simian Virus 40. That is one of a number of monkey viruses that has, over time, been introduced into human physiologies, and apparently the main vector for so doing was a number of contaminated vaccines, including contaminated polio vaccines. Now, we've been dealing with SV40 on and off for a number of years. The first program in which we dealt with that was For the Record program number 19, a roughly three-hour sequenced interview with Ed Haslam, the author of Dr. Mary's Monkey, and its preceding volume, Mary, Fairy, and the Monkey Virus. We've dealt with SV40, which appears to be a deadly cancer-causing virus. Now, in this program, I thought I would shed light not only on the past discussion of SV40, but in general on a couple of things. First of all, a lot of people are not aware that viruses can cause cancer. And also, there have been a number of points of discussion, most recently in For the Record program number 690, when I noted the timely death of Roland Arnall, described as the subprime of the Johnny Appleseed of subprime, who died of a fast-acting case of cancer just as the entire financial meltdown was taking place in 2008. And that highly secretive individual experienced a very timely case of cancer. And I noted in that context that cancer can be used as a weapon. It can be used as a vehicle for assassination. Freedom of Information Act documents have indicated that as early as 1954, chemical means for so doing had been perfected by, among other agencies, the CIA, as well as, I'm sure, the intelligence services of many other countries. It's worth noting how SV40 produces cancer, because the research that has been done by Ed Haslam indicates that research into SV40 and related viruses as weapons was going on in a big way in the 1960s, and that the milieu that was conducting that research was not only fascist, but had very strong avenues into elements of the national security establishment. So what we're doing in this program, both to shed light on the ongoing research into SV40, also to illuminate for people just how viruses can cause cancer, and also to perhaps provide some depth and insight into past discussions of cancer as an assassination weapon. How can you cause cancer at a deliberate point and in a particular individual? Well, hopefully this discussion is helping to flesh some of that out, no pun intended. Now, SV40 has a deadly, it's a very simple organism. It has just a few proteins, and one of the most deadly of those is called large T antigen. Along with small T antigen, those are deadly cancer-producing proteins. One of the things that SV40 does is to neutralize, this by the way, by way of review of what is inside one, it neutralizes both the RB proteins and the P53 genes. And what those two things do, basically, they are two of the cell's guards against the reproduction of malfunctioning cells. In other words, when a cell has become damaged during reproduction, those twin functions, the RB proteins and the P53 gene, assure that those defective cells will die rather than being reproduced and producing cancer or some other form of disease. SV40 and large T antigen neutralize both the RB proteins and the P53, and the neutralization of both is essential for a cell to become carcinogenic. In addition, SV40 also activates the MET and NOTCH1 oncogenes, and these are genes which, just as the breaks, the cellular breaks, the RB proteins and the P53 gene have to be neutralized, so too the cellular ignitions, so to speak, the go switches, such as MET and NOTCH1, both oncogenes have to be activated, and SV40 has been shown to activate both types of, both oncogenes, both types of cellular ignitions, so to speak. And what we're going to do is to resume with the thread of discussion with which we concluded side one. We've been talking about the telomeres, which are thin strands of protein at the end of the chromosomes. And as the cell reproduces, as a cell reproduces, the telomeres shorten a little bit, and the end result of that is that a cell culture has a definitive lifespan. It can only cells can only reproduce a certain number of times before they die. However, SV40 changes that. So I'm going to overlap this element of discussion with what we concluded on side two. Talking about the telomeres and how SV40 changes them, we read from, again, the book that we were dealing with in side one, The Virus and the Vaccine, authored by Debbie Bookshin and Jim Schumacher, published in softcover by St. Martin's Press and copyright 2004 by the authors. And Debbie Bookshin and Jim Schumacher write about the telomeres and how SV40 affects them as follows. Knocking out a cell's brakes and kicking on its accelerator is still not sufficient to produce unchecked tumor growth. Nature blessed the body with an additional anti-cancer feature. Cells have a limited lifespan. A healthy cell will reproduce itself only a finite number of times before dying. That is because each time a cell divides, the telomeres, a spindle of microfibers on the ends of each chromosome, shorten a little bit. In classical mythology, three goddesses, the Fates, wove together the fabric of a person's life, determining how long he or she would live. Telomeres are literally the threads of life. They determine the natural lifespan of all cells. Each time a cell divides, a little piece of the thread gets used up and the telomeres get shorter. Once they have shortened beyond a certain point, the cell and all the daughter cells which derive from it have used up all their allotted thread. They cannot divide any longer and they die. This is why most scientists believe that all human beings, no matter how healthy, have an upper limit to their lifespans. And next, by the way, there's a reference to a human cell substrata culture, WI-38. WI refers to Wistar. That was the pharmaceutical company, that is the medical research company for whom Leonard Hayflick was doing this research. Continuing with the author's account, interestingly, this phenomenon, talking about the shortening of the telomeres with cellular reproduction. Interestingly, this phenomenon was discovered in the 1960s by Leonard Hayflick as he was perfecting his human cell substrata, WI-38. During his work on WI-38, Hayflick discovered that after dividing 40 to 60 times, his strain of human diploid cells inevitably died. Even if they had been frozen for years, once they were thawed and began dividing again, their total number of doublings never exceeded this preordained amount. Nature had programmed a natural lifespan or senescence into every cell. Today, the number of divisions a cell can undergo before dying is known as the Hayflick limit, in honor of the scientist whose discovery opened up an entire new field of inquiry, cell gerontology. Because of the Hayflick limit, even those cells in which P53 has been disabled or growth factors have been stimulated are still subject to this internal limit and usually enter so-called crisis and die after dividing 40 or so times. And then how SV40 affects this is described by the authors as follows. Dr. Carboni and Rudy Fadas, a postdoctoral student in his laboratory, found that SV40 activates telomerase, an enzyme that allows the telomeres to be elongated every time the cell divides instead of becoming shortened, in effect, allowing the mesothelial cells to divide endlessly. Ironically, it was the virus's contamination of the polio vaccine that led to the search for an alternative substrata by Hayflick, which in turn led to the discovery of the importance of telomeres. Now, it turns out that it is SV40's interference with the natural behavior of telomeres that allows malignant cells to become immortal instead of dying as they normally and should, as they normally would do and should. The idea of human cancer is that you need many different carcinogens because different carcinogens do different things, Carboni explains, again quoting, "Cancer is a multifactorial process," unquote. In essence, there is no such thing as a complete carcinogen, one substance that causes cancer by itself. Rather, a cell normally requires numerous hits or insults from various carcinogens before it can become cancerous. One will inactivate P53, another will activate a tumor oncogene. Something else will cause chromosome damage. Still something else must occur to activate telomerase. Eventually, the cell becomes a tumor cell. There is no one thing that has been shown capable of doing all these three things together, Carboni asserts, except for SV40, unquote. SV40 can block the RBs and P53. It can activate several oncogenes that stimulate the cell to grow. It can alter chromosomes and also induce telomerase activity. Quote, therefore, SV40 by itself can do everything that is required to make a human cell malignant, he says, again quoting, it is one of the most potent human carcinogens that we know, unquote. Now, you would think that, well, that's an awful lot for one, not only one virus, but basically one big A blank blank protein to do, neutralize the RB proteins and the P53 gene, scramble the genetic material of a cell, causing entire sections of genes to be ripped out or replaced, also neutralizing or turning on, I should say, the MET oncogene and NOTCH1 oncogenes, and causing the telomeres to elongate when cells divide instead of becoming shorter, you'd think that that is more than enough for one protein from one virus to do in terms of causing cancer. But, again, the title The Perfect War Machine alludes to the fact that's basically what it is. And we're not finished yet, folks. SV40 isn't finished either. So hold on to your hats. The authors go on to describe some other findings about just how deadly this virus is. And bear in mind, as we're listening to all of this, that not only is this a contaminant in many vaccines, including the polio vaccine, it can be sexually transmitted. It appears to be capable of being transmitted from mothers to infants when they breastfeed. And bear in mind that in the early 60s, this virus was the focal point of military research. Basically, it has been weaponized, or mutations of it have been weaponized. So as you listen to still more about what this remarkable organism can do, remarkable in a horrible way, bear in mind that not only is this thing all around, including in many of us, but it also has been weaponized and has been utilized as a weapon by some of the nastiest and most powerful forces on this planet. Continuing with the virus and the vaccine and the chapter from which we get the title of this broadcast, The Perfect War Machine, the authors write, cellular changes leading to cancer do not occur in a vacuum in the human body. Carboni notes that his SV40 findings are the result of cell culture studies, the only place in which SV40 infection can be safely and ethically tested on human cells. Because those studies take place in a test tube, not in the human body, they make no allowance for the defense of the human immune system. A healthy immune system generally seeks out and destroys invading viruses. The case of SV40 is no exception. Indeed, the fact that T antigen is such a strong tumor inducer also means that in most cases it provokes a strong immune response. That is why, as with other carcinogens, not everyone who is exposed to the virus will become ill. Carboni suspects that, like other cancer-causing substances, SV40 usually works in concert with other carcinogens to cause diseases. Whether the virus can sometimes cause cancer all by itself in human beings is still unknown. Human beings have devised many mechanisms to defend themselves against cancer, Carboni says. This is one of the reasons that human beings live so long compared with other animals, unquote. There are conditions, however, that militate against that response. One of them is the presence of an immunosuppressant such as asbestos. Used widely as insulation material beginning in the 1950s, asbestos has been found in homes, schools, offices, factories, and shipyards around the world. The versatile mineral fiber was used in a variety of heat-sensitive applications employed in everything from car brakes to lawnmowers, roofing materials to plumbing insulation. Over the last three decades, researchers have shown that asbestos fibers lodged in the lungs can act as an immune system depressant and trigger DNA damage that can lead to cancer. Debates about which types of asbestos are carcinogenic and whether the mineral fiber can always be traced to every case of the disease notwithstanding, thousands of mesothelioma victims have recovered damages from asbestos companies as a result of this research. In his original 1994 Oncogene paper, Carboni hypothesized that SV40 and asbestos might act synergistically to cause cancer in some cases where either one alone would be less effective. Later, in a series of experiments, Carboni and his team set out to determine how the two putative carcinogens might interact in mesothelial cell cultures. First, they deliberately mutated SV40 so that it could no longer produce small T antigen. The mutant viruses seem to have almost no ability to affect telomerase activity in mesothelial cells. Consequently, the cells did not become malignant. Next, they decided to see if adding asbestos to the mix had any effect. Interestingly, they discovered that when asbestos was added along with the SV40 mutant, they could now transform these same mesothelial cells. But asbestos by itself did not cause the mesothelial cells to become malignant. In a series of experiments conducted in 2003, this time not in tissue cultures but with hamsters, Carboni and Pass reached essentially the same conclusion. SV40 and asbestos are co-carcinogens. These recent experiments by Carboni and his team confirm some of the theories Carboni first advanced in 1994. One is that SV40 virus, with both of its tumorigenic proteins, appears capable of causing mesothelioma all by itself. Quote, "Clearly, there are some cases of SV40-associated mesothelioma in which no history of asbestos exposure has been demonstrated," he says. Another is that in certain cases, asbestos and SV40 can interact together to cause the disease. Although the mechanisms by which asbestos and SV40 interact is still unclear, exploring the synergistic relationship opens an intriguing new dimension in cancer research, the possibility that viruses and environmental toxins are much more deadly in tandem when it comes to tumor induction. "Can you think of anything more different on Earth than asbestos and a monkey virus?" Carboni says. "Yet you stick them together and they work together to be more deadly than either one of them is alone," unquote. The implications, Carboni says, are far-reaching. Traditionally, researchers have looked at only one variable when researching the cause of cancer. But if it is true that environmental toxins can interact with relatively common viruses to cause cancer, it may be time to reconsider what constitutes an acceptable risk, unquote, for exposure to such carcinogens, says Carboni. The synergistic properties of two seemingly unrelated carcinogens may, when combined, raise the cancer risk to a substantially higher level than exposure to either one of them alone. So, in addition to the fact that SV40 and certainly asbestos and probably other substances as well can serve as co-carcinogens, the researchers researching SV40 have come across some other very interesting facts as well. First of all, even after cells that have become infected and malignant as a result of SV40, even after the SV40 and the large T antigen have disappeared from those cells, they can become even more deadly because they are malignant, and yet the absence of large T antigen makes these cells largely invisible to the immune system, so it gives SV40 sort of a stealth cancer-causing capability. The authors write about this as follows, saying, "Meanwhile, other research shows that SV40 has additional cancer-causing tricks. Sometimes, the virus sets off the chain reaction that leads to tumor formation, yet manages to leave no trace that it was ever present. In virology, this is described as a hit-and-run mechanism. The virus can cause so much damage that the cell perpetuates its own malignant growth long after the virus has disappeared." A team of scientists from Bonn has demonstrated this mechanism in rats, showing that SV40 is able to inflict damage in cells and then vanish completely. The German team infected fetal rat brain cells that had been rendered cancerous by large T antigen into the brains of adult rats. 80% of the adult rats developed a brain cancer that is the rodent equivalent of human medulloblastoma, one of the pediatric brain cancers with which SV40 has been associated, and the same type that afflicted Alexander Horwin. By the way, Alexander Horwin is a boy whose death as the result of SV40-induced cancer is one of the threads that unites this book. Continuing, when the Bonn researchers searched for large T antigen in the tumors, it was no longer present in some of the cells. Yet these particular sets of transformed or malignant cells appeared to be even more malignant than those that were still expressing the T antigen, evidently because without the presence of T antigen, the immune system could no longer recognize them as a threat. Thanks to SV40, the cancer cells were now able to escape notice by the body's disease detection radar. This finding may explain how SV40 and perhaps other viruses as well can induce cancer and yet not be readily detectable once tumors start proliferating rapidly. Without the presence of an immunogenic protein like T antigen, cancer cells are less prone to immune system attack. Thus, after a certain point in tumorigenesis, cancer cells that have rid themselves of the virus have higher survival rates than those that still contain SV40, eventually replacing SV40-infected cells as the dominant subset in some expanding tumors. Yet the ultimate source for the aggressive, stealth cancer was still SV40. And as we're going to see in the next section, in addition to that stealth factor, there is yet another sort of stealth or hit-and-run mechanism. Apparently, SV40 can cause cells that it infects to produce chemicals which activate the MET or NOTCH1 oncogenes in other cells, even though those cells have not been infected by SV40 themselves. So basically, again, SV40 infects some cells, causing them to produce chemicals which switch on the oncogenes like MET and NOTCH1, even though those neighboring cells have not themselves been infected by SV40. This capability of SV40, this hit-and-run stealth factor of SV40, is described as follows. Studies from Italy support this novel hypothesis. SV40 is dangerous as long as it is in the right tissue, even if it is not actually present in every or even most of the cells. A team led by Luciano Muti and Giovanni Godino discovered that a small number of SV40-infected mesothelial cells can induce malignancy in much larger numbers of nearby non-infected cells. Muti and Godino found that once SV40 invades the mesothelial cells, the virus not only turns on the MET oncogene within the cells it is infected, it also stimulates those cells to send chemical signals to their neighbors, forcing them to turn on MET as well. This last sentence again, because it's a doozy. Muti and Gaudino found that once SV40 invades the mesothelial cells, the virus not only turns on the MET oncogene within the cells it is infected, it also stimulates those cells to send chemical signals to their neighbors, forcing them to turn on MET as well. Now, these neighboring uninfected cells have also been artificially switched on from a resting phase into an unnatural, hyperactive growth phase. Thus, even if only a few tumor cells contain SV40, growth factors produced by these cells will spur the malignant growth of nearby cells that do not contain the virus. Muti also found that once tumor formation is underway, SV40 subverts one more cellular regulatory system in order to ensure that the tumor continues to grow. What the authors are about to describe here is how SV40 produces the substance VEGF, and this is a chemical which produces vascular growth, or basically blood vessel growth, and this produces the blood supply that is necessary for tumors to successfully grow. So on top of everything else, SV40 also stimulates the production of VEGF, which in turn produces the growth of the blood vessels required to feed a tumor and permit it to successfully grow. The SV40 ability to produce VEGF is described by the authors as follows. Muti also found that once tumor formation is underway, SV40 subverts one more cellular regulatory system in order to ensure that the tumor continues to grow. SV40 Muti discovered stimulates mesothelioma cells to produce vascular epithelial growth factor, or VEGF. VEGF is a chemical that promotes blood vessel growth. Muti found that in mesothelioma biopsies that tested negative for the presence of SV40, little VEGF is produced, while tumor cells that contained SV40 manufacture high levels of the growth factor. In this way, SV40, by encouraging blood vessels to grow toward the tumor, helps secure for the burgeoning cancer an ample supply of both blood and nutrients. Muti's data may offer a reason why mesothelioma is such a difficult cancer to cure. The SV40 helps maintain the malignant state of the cancerous cells and its nearby sisters with very little effort. Not surprisingly, Muti found that patients whose tumors contained the virus had shorter lifespans than those whose mesotheliomas were caused for other reasons. Some of the strongest evidence that SV40 causes mesothelioma has come from the labs of two self-proclaimed SV40 skeptics. David Shrump, a boyish-looking researcher with round glasses and sandy hair, succeeded Pass as the head of the thoracic oncology division of the NCI after Pass left the NCI in 1996. He had, by his own admission, no interest in looking for SV40 and had a very skeptical eye on what had been previously published about the association of SV40 with human tumors. In his experiment, he and his team established a series of mesothelioma cell lines that tested positive for SV40. They then devised a genetic magic bullet, a strand of RNA called an antisense that would bind onto SV40's T-antigen and disarm it. Doubtful that SV40 played any role in causing mesotheliomas, Shrump expected that his antisense would have no effect on the malignant cell cultures. Instead, to his surprise, Shrump found that disarming T antigens stopped the mesothelioma cell lines that contained SV40 from growing. The results of his experiment completely contradicted the working hypothesis Shrump had constructed before he began his experiment. And we're going to conclude the broadcast by taking a look at yet another interesting aspect of SV40, and that is the fact that there are two different variants of SV40, both of them extremely carcinogenic, but one of them grows to maturity in roughly 19 days instead of the 14 days that are the standard by which vaccine testing is conducted. So the slow growth SV40, which takes 19 days to reach maturity, would not be detected by ordinary vaccine testing procedures. The authors write of the slow and fast-growing SV40. In 1999, when Carboni tested his vials of 1955 vaccine for SV40 and realized that he had detected slow-growing SV40 variants, he became curious. Suppose a slow-growing SV40 variant were present in the oral vaccine. Were current FDA regulations, which required only 14-day cell culture cycles, adequate to detect all SV40 types, including SV40 that was slow-growing? Carboni conducted his own test. He discovered that the slow-growing strain of SV40 that he had recovered from Herbert Ratner's 1955 vaccine sample took 19 days to grow out or become apparent in tissue cultures. That meant FDA-mandated tests, as likely as not, would have failed to detect it or other slow-growing SV40 variants present in a vaccine. So because of the slow-growing variant and the fast-growing variant and the difference between those, it is probable that even the testing procedures used to detect SV40 would not have been sufficient to detect the slow-growing or 19-day SV40 variant. So that, in a nutshell, folks, is how SV40 produces cancer, and I hope this will help to flesh out people's understanding not only of the investigation of SV40 per se, but of the use of cancer as an assassination weapon and the general field of biological warfare research. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 694. Please use the SpitfireList.com website. Bet that'll flesh out your understanding for the subject of SV40 and the other material covered on this broadcast. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record 694, The Perfect War Machine, being recorded on October 18th of the year 2009. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.